And we're back.
Welcome to No Direction, the No Direction Network's Pathfinder news, reviews, and interviews podcast. I'm Ryan Costello.
And I'm Jefferson J. Thacker, also known as Baron.
We have a very exciting episode. More exciting than you may realize, because this is a book that I think is kind of flying under a lot of people's radars. And hopefully by the time we are done breaking it down, people are going to realize that this is actually one of the most exciting books that's come out in the Lost Omens line. We are going to be breaking down the Lost Omens Legends, which is coming out in a couple of weeks at Gen Con. And joining us to do that, we've got No Direction Network member and Paizo staffer, Paizo developer, Luis Loza. Hello, Luis.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We're very happy to have you. And Eleanor, I keep forgetting to double check how to pronounce your last name, and I'm sorry, but you are also a developer named Eleanor.
Yes, I am. I'm mostly here to keep Luis in check.
Finally.
I mean, total book breakdown. Who agreed to this?
Paizo did.
Sheppy is complimenting you for how still you can talk.
Your ventriloquism act is perfect.
We've had both of you on the podcast before. In fact, we've had both of you on the podcast together before. But just for people that may not remember, can you remind them what your responsibilities are on the Lost Omens line? I guess starting with Eleanor.
Put me on the spot here. Luis is probably the one with the canned response.
Luis is the one that talks a lot on the podcast. Let's get Eleanor started right away.
So we work on the Lost Omens line, which is basically more of the in-world setting specific stuff, very Galarian specific flavored. That doesn't mean you can't use it for your other bits of the setting, but it's more flavor than the whole crunchy pure rules books. But we've still had books in our line that are pretty crunchy, like the Lost Omens character guide. We sort of pick up and fill in the narrower looks at the setting that something huge like the APG can't really focus in on as much.
Luis, what else do you do on this line? Just fill in wherever Eleanor left off.
I was going to say, I do all of the same things Eleanor does, just from the other side of the cubicle. But I mean, Lost Omens line is kind of smashing our old 1E campaign setting line and the 1E player companion line together into one super line where we take deep dives in different setting material. So we might talk about the different ancestries, we might talk about the gods, or we might talk about notable NPCs in the setting and give you a lot of flavor and lore and history and break all of that down and then include rules options that tie into all of that. So for example, with Gods and Magic, we had lots of new domains and spells and magic items and things like that, plus new deities you can worship. So it all kind of ties that together rather than saying, here's a book that's all about traps and trap finders and trap breakers and stuff like that. We just have a more broader theme that we can then include lots of flavor and mechanics for that.
What has feedback been to the merging of the campaign setting and the player companions lines?
I think the biggest thing is we want the books to be bigger because we want more content. Yeah. Which, that's great. I'm glad people like that content, but we also have schedules to keep, which might be hard to do if the books get any bigger.
I'm sure they would also like more content for less price, which is also feedback we have gotten. But we pay artists and writers money.
And ourselves.
Yeah.
Actually, we need to recoup
some of that somehow.
When the lines changed, I ran the math on this, and we're actually getting about 30 additional pages of content for the same price as we for actually less than the same price when we were paying when we were buying both lines.
And a nice sturdy hardcover.
Yeah, and the hardcover really makes it nice. I like the hardcovers. That little, I mean, I wish every book was bigger, obviously, because I always want more content. But I really have begun to really like this slim profile hardcover, easy to hold, doesn't make me tired. Nice little focused book of content that the Lost Omens line has become. And it's been every bit as as enjoyable to read as the old campaign setting lines for certain. And I really love how it's sort of a, it's bringing back the magazine-like feel because of all the sidebars and all the mixed amount of content that ties into everything. It almost feels like the old day of Dragon Magazine returned, except for if every Dragon Magazine episode was issue was 50% bigger and with much better art. And less ads for stores that are bought.
Great compliment. Thank you.
I appreciate you for having done that math, Parham, and I hope that number spreads so that maybe people will be less upset about the price.
Can we talk about Legends? What, where did the concept for Legends come from?
I mean, I think the biggest thing is Eleanor's love for the, what is it, the sigil book?
It's called, what's it called?
Faces of Sigil.
Uncaged Faces of Sigil.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What is that?
It's a book very similar to this one. A number of NPCs, I forget how many, and it was a second edition Planescape book because, I say that like Planescape ever made it out of second edition tier, but it was a book of a bunch of interconnected NPCs that were around Sigil, which was the major city of that setting. And basically it was very well written, and those NPCs were much beloved and saw a lot of use because they were very useful to GMs and, even players to just hook in.
This isn't the first NPC book that Paizo has put out. There were several in first edition, including like Monster Codex, or some of the hardcover ones. This is nothing like those. Mm-hmm. So, Luis, you haven't spoken in a while. Can you just explain how, if you were expecting this to be like a celebrity version of Monster Codex, you are completely wrong?
Well, we went into that intentionally knowing that we were not going to be using any stat blocks, just because there are a number of reasons. First and foremost, it's a brand new edition, and locking in levels for a lot of these NPCs meant that we would potentially shut out future stories we could tell. A lot of these NPCs are brand new with the advent of 2E, or some, I think one or two are even literally brand new in this book. And the potential stories we have for them, we don't know. We don't know, for example, if we're going to do a Kizmar Krukchar AP in the future. And if we knew that, we might know what level he needed to be. But without knowing that, we don't want to lock ourselves in, say, oh, he's level 6. And then turns out, no, we need him to be the final boss of an AP. Oops. How do we resolve that? That's actually a problem that we ran into during Kingmaker problem. Not that big of a problem, but King Iravedi of Pitax had a micro stat block somewhere earlier that said, oh, he's level 9 or whatever. Turns out, oh, he's got to be the boss of the fifth volume of an AP. And there's a little sidebar that says, we know it said level 9, but actually, forget about that. So we didn't want to run into that problem. We also didn't have the rules for some of these characters to work with them in 2E anymore. We don't have technology. We don't have guns. We don't have anything equivalent to Mythic. So without all of those, it'd be hard to stat up these characters. So we knew immediately out of the gate, it's not your stat block book featuring pre-written backgrounds for GM ease of use. It's something different. And using the model of Faces of Sigil, we wanted it to just be something that was interesting to read. If you never play Pathfinder, if you've never played Pathfinder before or will after reading this book, but enjoy your time reading this, that means I think we've done a good job with the book. If you find all these characters interesting, you're excited by the story ideas that are here and like seeing the relationships that are happening between those. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I thought was important was to just be more than just your typical standard Pathfinder prose that we have, where it's kind of very informative. Oh, this is so-and-so, they live here, and blah, blah, blah. We wanted to have more interesting ways to read the book, so that's why we have fiction and fun little sidebars and handout images and stuff like that, just to make the book more interesting to look at and read.
So you brought up Kismark Kirkchar, and that reminded me, I forgot the full disclosure announcement at the beginning of this episode. This is not a review, this is a breakdown, which is what we've been doing for a lot of the hardcovers lately, but specifically one of the reasons we have to do it for this one is that several members of the No Direction Network are contributors to this book, including me.
Yeah, I think I'm the only one on the show that hasn't put a word on this one.
Well, oh, on this show,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So, like, I could review it, but then it'd just be me giving it a review and you three just listening patiently, glaring at me, judgingly. No. I was really surprised when I started reading this book to find out exactly what kind of book it was for two reasons. One, I was pleasantly surprised because while we have had NPC books in the past, The Rival's Guide has been mentioned in chat, Ships of the Inner Seas, the NPC Codexes, and the So we've seen lots of NPCs in books before, but they've usually kind of been minor, or they've been like minor celebrity NPCs because of their fame and other works. They weren't always the movers and shakers. In fact, it for a while there, it seemed that Pathfinder was allergic to showing us the movers and shakers of the world in too much detail, unless they happened to show up in an AP. And I think a lot of that goes back to the very early days when you all were swearing off, you know, detailing all these high-level NPCs or high-influential NPCs for bemoaning early days in Pathfinder, bemoaning it devolving into the realms and how a lot of people have critiqued the Forgotten Realms as being nothing but the PCs watching more powerful and important characters accomplish things in the background. But I was glad to read this book because, as I said earlier, no one heard because of technical issues. Flags and maps don't have personalities, and these movers and shakers and ultimately quest givers, I mean, there were several times throughout here that it says so-and-so is looking for agents to help accomplish blah 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 blah, and this allows you to more identify with what a nation is like, what a nation wants to do, what troubles they face, because you're able to put a face on it. Like, I know more about what life in Cheliax is like now that I see how absolutely redonkulously devious Abigail Thrun is than I ever did staring at a helmetless faceless helmet of a Hell Knight and a weird red and black flag before. It's a big boogeyman of Cheliax, but half the people actually work for them because they were super popular in society. And this just makes it better. And I do think that you all managed to like walk that line between providing us interesting characters to drive stories forward without making a bunch of characters that the PCs instantly act like, well, why are we even here if we have such and such that can do so amazing things like close the world wound?
Yeah, I mean, the title of the book just calls them all legends. And that sort of, we don't have levels on them, but you sort of get the impression that they're in positions where they can't necessarily move without... They need agents to send around. They're not the ones on the ground running around and killing ye 10 rats to get one rat to give to the quest giver. These are a lot of political figures and people in power and just generally, as you said, quest givers. I mean, Queen Abigail Thrun probably could really ruin somebody's day, but at the same time, she's got contracts to sign. She doesn't have time to go running around and lop the head off some kobolds that are bothering so and such village. That's your job, and she'll pay you well for it.
Speaking of contracts, do you want to go into the contract that's her handout on page 11?
Oh, I gotta pull that
yes.
up. Oh
my sure. God, that was so what, let's do
want,
that.
Do you want us to just read it verbatim?
I mean, for people that haven't seen it yet, maybe just read the first part just to know what they're into.
I'll read the first sentence, or what looks to be a sentence, because there's no proper periods to tell me when something is in here. This says subsection 14.50.010.004, no limitations, right of first refusal. Nothing set forth in this agreement, including without limitation, the receipt of infernal services under this agreement shall. And then it goes on to explain more and more about this subsection. Oh, but... with
Okay.
Awesome legalese, literally written by a lawyer, mind you.
So the brilliance of this is you really do have to read the whole thing to really recognize the brilliance. Because
you read the whole thing?
Yes, I did.
Eleanor and I had to read it when we were developing it, and just our eyeballs, I think, just rolled.
Oh my gosh! Head. Though it's,
I think I broke out brilliance into a sweat.
In here. Because you get into paragraph two, and it talks about what happens when there's a violation. And then it says, like, both parties will come up on a mutually agreed upon that has the intent and economic effect of such provisions provided. However, that if the parties are unable to agree upon such a provision, a substitute provision advanced by the infernal party shall not be binding on the parties hereafter. But then you read all the way down at the end, and then the like tiny little text, section two, the agreement shall be interpreted. Let's find this. Regarding interpretation of the previous hereafter, the parties hereunto acknowledge that this agreement shall be interpreted such as a manner as to remove the word not from the final sentence of sections 3.100.250.101 and the final sentence of section 14.50.010.005. And that such interpretations now will be binding by both parties here for forth, which totally says that whenever you have a disagreement, the infernal party always gets their way.
Aaron? Nope.
Huh?
You froze for a second there, bro.
Oh no, did you at least hear the one?
Yeah, it was the last couple of words, I think, is all we lost.
Oh no. So basically it says that if you read the whole thing, the very last sentence changes the last sentence of the second paragraph to basically says anytime there's a disagreement, the devil gets his due.
Mm-hmm. And so people in chat have figured out this is Ron Lundeen. This is the lawyer that you were talking about.
Yep.
It couldn't have been anybody else.
So how did you decide what kind of just like accessory page that a lot of these characters would be getting? Because their character... they're so characterful that they enhance every single section that they're in.
Basically, we just
looked at the person as like, well, what's the most interesting thing we can put here?
Yeah, a lot of them are pretty obviously. It felt very obvious. Oh, Abigail Thrun. She has informal contracts. Let's throw a page of this contract in. That's very easy. Some of them, I think we got a bit more creative as we went on. Like we have an image of a kind of a not accurate map of the Haojin tapestry and the locations they're in, or the map that we assumed is maybe stolen from the Crimson Citadel of the Red Mantis headquarters. So to use as potential handouts that GMs could use. Hey, someone's stolen this map. This is what it looks like. You can use that now in your game to potentially have cool stuff going on. We have a basic layout of the Citadel. Maybe our infiltration will succeed.
I loved in General Azerci's section at the end of that, where it's the Iron Fang recruit manual. And it's got proper expressions. So this is a smiling goblin. This is considered sinister. Don't do that. And then interacting with humans, where it's like, oh, humans also value complimentary words said about the diversion of resources to useless purposes. For example, humans enjoy wasting water and land on inedible flowers and often walk in circles among such flowers. And it's like, yeah, you really got us. That is such a human thing to do.
I think that was an extension of some of the stuff we saw in the Iron Fang Invasion AP as well. There were like weird like manuals about how to be a member of the Iron Fang Legion and stuff, so it just made sense to kind of build off of that and keep going.
Yeah, at the end of every single Iron Fang Invasion AP volume, I think it's the back cover, is this Iron Fang recruit manual. And in the AP, it's just like this really brutal, just absolutely monstrous instructions to recruits on how to deal with prisoners or, you know, battle tactics or stuff like that. And so we wanted to see like the peacetime ones. It's like, well, now that you're not devoting your entire instructions to murdering everything you come across in the most heinous ways possible, what does a hobgoblin at peace look like? And so we asked for this page to tell hobgoblins what to do when they're not allowed to just jam a sword through your head when you annoy them.
So I also do love that this book really does show what's happened after the adventure paths, because that's been summed up in like little sidebars and whatnot throughout all the different books that have covered the setting right now. This one really does say, like, flat out, here are some details about some of the NPCs you've met. Here are how some of the storylines played out. So we understand the official canon of what is going on with these previous first edition adventure paths.
Yeah. It's on that note that there was actually one, when I went to read the whole book, which Ryan just got a giggle about, there was one set of pages that I absolutely skipped immediately, and that was Princess Eutropia, because there's no way I can't spoil this. No, I can't do this to myself. it would make Adventurous worse for you all to listen to if I actually knew what the heck was going on.
Yeah, here be spoilers. I'm pretty sure that's in the introduction, actually.
Oh, it is.
I think verbatim.
Yeah. And
spoilers ahead.
And one of the other things that really surprised me about this book is that the number of different voices and methods that it takes to present the information to you. You get the standard RPG style setting material voice in a lot of it, but then in some places, I think the one that like absolutely summed it up best was Old Mage Jotembe. Did I get that pronunciation right?
Jotembe.
As far as any of us.
Okay. So on Old Mage Jotembe,
you got Jotembe right, but you called him Old Mage. He's Old Man Jotembe.
It says Old Mage on the title.
Does it?
Yeah. Yes, it's Old Mage.
Old Mage.
What? Have I been wrong this whole time?
I reckon you've been
lying. Wow! How did I do that?
Which
I think, I wonder if he's more upset about his name being mispronounced or just being called Old Man.
So, Old Mage Jotembe, who's been one of my favorite characters ever since the very first time I flipped through any of the Galarian stuff, his story starts with we get a paragraph that's in typical campaign setting voice, but then it goes with a like told story in mythological style that you would read like if you were reading things like Anasi stories about him discovering and bringing magic back to the world. And then it just sort of breaks to like a short story from the point of view of two people studying at the academy or putting on a performance. I was really unsure what role they play here, but they're getting ready to put on performances about Jotembe and studying his works. And it's just like this in-character moments between these two characters. And then it jumps into, at the end, it goes into just stat blocks. And because we have a story and then potentially unreliable narrators, a lot of this very important figure, we actually still don't know a lot of definitive facts for. And I think it's just more appropriate for it, especially since we find out in an entire other section, he's got a scheduled once a century lunch date with a certain queen of witches.
Yep. I mean, all credit goes to Andrew Mullen, who wrote that section. He also ended up writing previously for us in the character guide, the section on the Magambia organization. So those two characters that are about to tell the story of Jotembe are actually an Easter egg from that book. If you have the character guide and go to page 99, you might remember the picture of a big spider offering a snack to one of the students. And it's those two that are about to tell that story and rehearsing and stuff, because he's weaving all that together. But yeah, it's just it's great. I love all the different voices that come with this, and that's I think only possible because of how many different freelancers we had for this project. We intentionally went out of our way to get a lot of people on here, both old and new, to just give us what they could.
Credit to those freelancers, they all talked to each other and cooperated to each other while they were writing, and that's part of why there were so many interconnecting plot hooks, is because they were telling each other what they wrote.
Yeah, I think the Baba Yaga and Jotembe century lunch date is just a funny thing that Andrew Mullen and Mikhail Raccoon came up with together. And it's like, cool, now we got to have art of it, of course. And then even Eleanor got to expand it just a bit ago on the blog with her story about it.
Yeah,
so it just ties into that whole interconnectedness that I think, Ryan, you were even part of and got to see firsthand how many people were yelling at each other about, hey, include this in my section, and then I'll include that thing for you, and blah, 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 blah.
It has been really cool seeing how the collaboration worked on this book. Are you okay going into a little bit of the logistics of how you handled that collaboration?
Sure.
So you set up a Discord server just for all the freelancers, and people were giving each other feedback. They were posting their early drafts. They were asking lore questions. They were just discussing how two characters would interact because, you know, the outline would suggest make a connection between these two characters, but sometimes it wasn't always explicit. And it was a lot of fun just watching it all come together. And it's actually been like the best part of this server has been since we got our contributor copies. And we're just all complimenting each other because this is such a fun book. And like you were saying, it's got so many contributors and their voice really comes through more than any other Pathfinder book that I can remember. Like you really can feel like the author put themselves into their section.
Which actually brings up my one criticism of this book. And
don't you dare! Okay, so
my biggest criticism of this book actually is just something I discovered towards the end of reading it that I really wish I had at the beginning of it because it's such a handy guide. And it at the very end, right before you get to basically the glossary, there is this little entwined destinies chart, which just maps out some of the major plots and connections and themes that are going out throughout the book, which are actually these major overarching storylines in the Inner Seas that, oh boy, did I wish I had access to while I was reading it, because these were things that I was piecing together a little bit at a time while reading it all and connecting all these NPCs and realizing they did indeed connect to each other. And also throughout the whole book, you have these little sub bars at the bottom that says this references these other NPCs. But if this had been like really right up front, at least I would be able to more look out for that in advance instead of discovering it dynamically. And while discovering it dynamically was very rewarding as somebody who was reading it page for page for page and going through the whole book, I worry that a lot of people are going to go through the book more piecemeal when you have a reference book like this and may miss some of the rich interconnectedness that it has. Whereas if this had been like right up front, it would have really helped sell that to me. But again, it is in the book and it's absolutely wonderful. And I guess my only criticism is that I discovered it only after mapping this all out in my head instead of beforehand.
I guess you basically answered why we put it in the back, because we wanted people reading through to discover it organically. I mean, it's almost like quote unquote spoilers in the back. Like as you slowly piece together what's going on just by looking at all these different plots. I mean, almost like a PC might as they're interacting with these people.
Good Lord, what PC would...
Did you notice which section is not represented in any of these charts? There's only one, right, Luis?
Oh, there's... Yeah, Perrin was mentioning that every entry has a little mini sidebar at the end that says, oh, we've referenced these 8 or so other characters, here's where you can find them in the book or maybe in other locations. But yes, there is one entry which has no connections whatsoever.
Thank God.
They are completely isolated. So if you're someone who decides to follow along and read the book by saying, oh, it tells me to go read these 4 other sections, you will never reach this point by following all the connections that we've set in place for you. Just because it's more fun this way. So the Lick-Toed Goblins, no one knows them except, you know, maybe all of the fans. And they're up to their own thing off well beyond Galarian, but they're still notable figures that we thought we want to put them in, but they don't know Abigail Thrun or Jatembe, at least that we know of. So they don't have any connections. I put in the art order for this. We have been using the same artist since the character guide for our cover art, Katarina Burmack, and unless something goes wrong or changes, I don't think we're going to give up on using her anytime soon, just because she always gives us amazing material. We discussed for a while, like, what could this cover be? Oh, could it be, you know, two of these NPCs fighting a thing, or, you know, some big NPC codex style gathering where all of them are on the cover, and that would have been amazing, but probably a boatload of work. We ended up deciding on something that's akin to just like a movie poster, where it's got some floating heads and maybe some figures in the front. And I just said, here's the movie poster style that we want to match. I think I grabbed like the Ant-Man poster, and here's the four figures we want on it. Here you go. And of course, Ekaterina gave us just amazing results, like always.
And how did you choose the location as the in the background?
I think it's meant to hint that it's possibly, what's the name of that island in the middle of the eye in the lake where Tar Baphon hangs out now? The Isle of Dread, that's right. And I think it's just supposed to suggest that, hey, look, it's a spooky thing. It was not meant to draw any more attention beyond we needed something that wasn't just a flat single color. So I said, give us a background with maybe waves and like cliffs and stuff. So.
It's very cool. Like, the four figures you've got represented show just a wide variety of the type of characters you're going to get in here. You've got royalty, a pirate, an old mage, and a monster. Clearly something horrible.
Yeah.
Skeletor.
And basically.
Oh, wait, no. I thought you meant Abigail.
Two monsters on the cover.
One of them is more visually monstrous. And what about inside? Should we expect a lot of these art figures to be released as pawns? Because I'd like that very much. In fact, I'd like them to be like foil embossed, stand out as legends.
Hollow pawns.
Oh no!
Wow! Hollow pawns.
The hollows are only a chase series. One of your pawns in each pawn set is going to be hollow, so it's going to need to be a collector's item. You'll have to buy multiple sets and trade them on eBay to get a full hollow set of pawns. And
you have to buy what those little like plastic packs of.
Oh, it's like those horrible sticker packs. Oh no.
We'd love to have them all as pawns. Oh. That's not our department. You have to go and egg someone else.
Yeah, go bug Mark Moreland and Eric.
I love bugging Mark Moreland.
And well, here's more ammo for your next bugging session. And I mean, I would love to see them as pawns. I mean, if you don't know who these characters are. Yeah, or even hollow pawns. If you don't know who these characters are, still having like a cool pirate or a cool old wizard, it's still useful for lots of games and stuff.
Heck, I'll take trading cards.
Yeah.
So, what on earth would we use two goblins riding an infernal pig for?
A severe encounter rather than a moderate encounter.
You know what we haven't talked about? The crunch.
Yes.
Every section has. You know, a small section of it dedicated to new crunch. What was the thinking going into what would show up in each section?
Well, not every section.
Not every section?
Yeah, every like.
I'm glad you came away with that impression, because I know what the first complaint about this book is going to be, which is there wasn't enough crunch. And I know what the second complaint about this book is going to be, which is the NPC that I wanted to have crunch did not have crunch.
All right, so how was it decided which NPCs would get the larger sections that allowed for them to have crunch, and what was some of the direction you gave for the crunch?
I think first and foremost we decided who would have the most interesting options to give away to people. As fun as the Lictote goblins are, I don't think if you met them in the game they would say, oh, here you go, here's our special fire bombs that we make and only share with people who go to the astral plane and find us. Some characters had more obvious mechanical options that just immediately jumped off the page. Like Artorkis Kieran, the creator of the Sun Orchid Elixir, is a master alchemist. What kind of unique alchemy does he know, and what can he teach you? Let's find out in this book. So some of those characters just screamed at us that, hey, we want to give you more stuff.
Well, but you disappointed, because the thing I really wanted from him is how to get my own meerkat that talks and dresses immaculately.
It turns out you just need a familiar with the speech ability.
Darn it.
And you need like about a million levels because you're immortal.
Yeah, that guy is old.
And then beyond the obvious ones where we thought, you know, Jotembe, he's got magic, stuff like that. Some of them we wanted to give a bigger section to get detail them a bit more. Someone like Tarbifan, who's shown up a lot in Pathfinder previously and will continue to show up in Pathfinder from here on out because he's still out there, is probably going to get a lot of information written about him still to come. So he probably doesn't need four pages and then cool necromancy spells. As great as they are, maybe someone else deserves a little bit more of the spotlight for just a moment. So some of these are newer characters like Kismar or you know, older characters that we've had around for a while and just haven't checked in with for a long time. And, you know, just seeing those, depending on how much we wanted to focus on them. Unfortunately, as much as I would have loved to, you know, give them all a bigger spread, the constraints of the page count and stuff meant that only some of them got the chance to do that.
All right. You've mentioned Kismar a couple of times, and it doesn't even seem like you're fully doing it just... You know,
nope, I just happen to be scanning through the book, and that's the name that I flipped to as I talked about it both times.
He's got like a nice central position in the book.
How did Kismar even make the cut for this book?
I don't even remember. I think we went through the world guide and found all the NPCs we mentioned and used that as a starting point for who's going to be in this book. I think the original meeting, we had something like close to 70 people that were like, maybe they can go into this book. So we have plenty to start from if we want to do a follow-up Greater Legends or Legends 2 or something.
I think some of it was just as an answer to, you know, what's going on in this part of the world now? Now that we've had this big AP and, you know, solved everything. The Technic League has been kicked out and probably destroyed and... Kevoth Kul has gone to Alcoholics Anonymous or whatever, or gotten murdered. So what's going on in Numeria? And why, like, if nothing is going on, why haven't a bunch of barbarians with laser pistols come rushing out of there to ruin everybody's day? And so knowing that Kismar was in there alongside Kevoth Kul, those two NBCs gave us a good window to show what was going on in that place after, you know, the big AP, and then we didn't check in on them for like half an edition.
I had and in a addition lot of to fun. That, oh, go for it.
Yeah, in addition to that, we also wanted to have to at least some representation for all of the core ancestries, and we didn't have a lot of notable gnomes that we just say, look at this gnome. They're, you know, the king of so-and-so gnome land. And Kismar, hey, he's a gnome. Maybe he can represent a little bit of the gnome touch here in this book.
Oh, so he's the token gnome. Is he the only gnome in the book?
He might be. Turns out there's a lot of humans.
The only gnome in the book.
Yeah, there's a lot of humans in this book. Sorry, maybe next time we'll get more gnomes in. We'll get gnome legends, Lost Omen gnomes legends.
I mean, I'd like that.
I mean, we can try to put another legends book. We have plenty more, but you have to get people to buy the book.
I really want people to buy this book, and not just because I contributed to it. As soon as I started reading this over, I really started to just understand how special this product was, and that it was not, it was even like, you know, I participated in it. I saw the outline. I got to interact with all the people that were working on it. But once I got the entire thing, not in my hands because I only have the PDF so far. But yeah, it's just been a joy to flip through. It is just some of my favorite fiction based around Galarian. And I really think that this might be a book that people are going to kind of pass over because they might think I don't need these NPCs or I know the setting or whatever, and they really shouldn't. This is an amazing book, and it's so much fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the things I love about the Tales line is that it let me see what life in Galarian would be like from the point of view of the characters, which makes me a better GM because I'm better able to describe that experience. And this at least gives me some manner of the same experience from the point of view of the leaders, especially when we get like in character fiction snippets or all that little flavor and the contract and the little sketches and like Kismet's lab notes in the sidebar. Those little tidbits of flavor are super valuable to any GM that wants to represent the world in a more flavorful way than just describing the rooms and encounters that they go on to, or describing it as yet just another generic fantasy world, when Galarian has been so much more than that since the very first time a word hit the page.
I think we are about ready to wrap up the interview, especially with all of the tactical issues we're having. We don't want to just completely fail and not actually finish the this section. So is there anything each of you think people should be paying attention to about this book that may have not been covered yet? We'll start with, once again, Elnor.
What have we not talked about? I don't know.
I feel like we could just talk about every single section and how great it is, or we talk about it broadly. And it is basically a single chapter book. So by not talking about every single section individually, we're kind of like, I don't know, we're somewhere between zoomed out and zoomed in on this book as far as how we're covering it.
Yeah, it's difficult.
Like a bestiary.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it.
It's difficult to like anything broad that hasn't been covered. I feel like you've gotten a pretty good look at it. And of course, anything narrow is just, well, who's in this book? Which, by the book, find out. Actually, the thing that nobody will look at, but I'm really proud of, is the two ships that are in this book, because they look amazing. And just like when I put the art order in for them, I was thinking of like Pirates of the Caribbean. If you see that ship come up like behind yours, I want people to know instantly whose ship that is coming up on your port or whatever. So yeah, you've got Tessa's up on there, and just that gold deck with the red. I am so happy with how those turned out, because if you see that, and I think it's called Luck of the Draw, you know whose ship that is that's coming up, and you know how much you should adequately panic or not.
And Luis, anything to add?
Yes, and I love all this stuff. I mean, I could tease so many more things, so I will. there's just rules that I don't think people are going to expect. I mean, we've mentioned that Baba Yaga's in here. I think I've said before elsewhere that Baba Yaga can be an eligible witch patron if you're willing to go through the process of earning
not
that.
Being eaten.
But there's also
not worth it.
A swashbuckler option if you meet up with General Azaersi and are willing to go through the hobgoblin training for all of that. There is new red mantis options here if you know, figure out a way to learn those. New stuff for the Knights of Last Wall. So we're expanding on archetypes and options in just ways that I think people are not going to expect. So there are even new class feats here beyond just the APG stuff. So there's like a new alchemist feat or two here and there. So there's just interesting options. And part of the hope with this book is that players will read this too, see the cool options that are in it, see that they are probably uncommon or rare, and go to the GM and say, I want to get that. How do I go talk to this person or get a quest from them or whatever, so my character can use this option because I want it, and kind of encourage that happening in both directions at the table. GMs will see a cool NPC that they want to use, and then, you know, give players their reward for working with them, or players will see the cool stuff they want and demand that their GM let them get that stuff and earn it in the game.
If any of my players asked for something, say, like the Fiendish Teleportation contract, I'd gladly let them have it and giggle all the way.
Can I sell my soul? Oh, yes.
Well, thank you both for joining us. This was not the smoothest ride, but thank you for both sticking with us for the whole thing. Before we go, is there anything you want to give a shout out to outside of Lost Omens Legend? Something else you're working on? Something else at all? Luis?
Is this where I do the thing?
Do your thing.
Okay. I've been working with a little website known as NoDirectionPodcast.com, the No Direction Network, on getting a new... Okay. Yes. Hey. Talking about 2E Podcasts. Yeah, it's a wholly original podcast. I'm not going to be running through an adventure or an adventure path or anything like that, because as fun as that is, I feel like flexing my creative muscles. So I'm setting it still in Galarian. It just happens to not be in the Inner Sea. I spin the globe and it's set in Arcadia. And Param, I've sent you a picture. It's not your typical fantasy stuff. It's fantasy Wild West.
Okay, hold on. And I'm pulling it up now.
It's going to feature things like guns and weird Arcadian temples and magic and stuff like that. And I'm in the process still of getting those first few episodes edited. But I have a great team in the form of Owen Casey Stevens and Rob Pontius from the network. I also have freelancer Jessica Redicop and Paizo editor Avi, who are all four of them are just fantastic, and we've had a blast so far. So I'm looking to get that ready to go in the next few weeks, and potentially even take these homebrew gun rules and throw them to maybe the No Direction patrons to let them kick the wheels a bit before premiering this episode.
Oh man,
that's really, you're throwing it to us because you've got your own Patreon with cool exclusive content.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote these before I had a Patreon, so we'll see. I mean, I can always also throw them to the patrons. Hey, that's another thing I want to shout out. Hey, I have a Patreon, patreon.com/LuisLoza.
It's really
good. Feel free to give me money if you want.
It's got with cool your bunny stuff folk.
About with my rabbit and hero and points.
Stuff like that.
Man, I loved it. When you showed me this image, I was just like sold instantaneously just looking at this thing.
Yeah, I am looking forward to hearing Valiant. I was saying this before we got cut off, so I don't know if this made it through, but No Direction Network has needed a regular 2E podcast. Adventurous started when it was still 1E was being published, and for various reasons, we've continued to run it as a 1E podcast, and we've got Stellar and Intrepid Heroes, both of which are Starfinder podcasts. And otherwise, we've done some 2E one-shots, mostly playtesting things or just for fun, and nothing ongoing. So Valiant is something that we have needed, and I am so glad that you brought this idea to us, and you brought this idea to us, right? I know I brought...
You asked me if I was up for doing a podcast, and I said, as long as I get to do whatever I want, and you let me run with it.
All right. Well, thank you for running with it, Luis. That's not the first time that I've asked you to do something, and you've run with it.
Mm-hmm. Like how long, Legend Lore was what, 2 days from conception to recording?
Yeah, it was basically Ron and John were talking about the digital divination, and we were like, boy, it would be good if we also had the Pathfinder version of that. Who are the hosts we should have for that? How about Luis and Lauren? Are you two up for it? You two were up for it. And now you've been putting out it, at the same time, at the same pace as John and Ron, who had been coming up with this podcast of theirs much longer in advance.
Yeah, and absolutely some of my favorite content on the network by far.
Eleanor, what would you like to shout out to?
Well, now I've gotten all wrapped up in this show. I'm sure there's some great cause I could shout out to, but I can't think of any at the moment, so I'm going to shout out to the Skittermander minis, paper minis that I made that you can get for sale at Rogue Genius Games.
These are cool.
Yes.
And they are for Skittery, so check those out.
No, these are the Skittermander options. Param, can you find the Skittermander minis to throw?
I got them. I threw them in the chat.
Yes.
Thank you. Well, Eldar, I'm also going to shout out to, we briefly mentioned it, but you did a piece of fiction about Old Mage, Jitumbe, and Baba Yaga's meetings. That went up on the Paizo blog. It basically took this piece of artwork that was inspired by Andrew, and you turned it into an entire work of fiction that is just fun to read, especially after you've read Lost Omens Legend. So thank you for that. Is that something that you expect to do more of in the future?
We've got another one lined up for this Friday to talk about a different legend.
Is that...
We'll have to wait.
All right.
Probably 2 days from now. If you're not going to buy the book, at least be patient.
They're going to buy the book. They have to. Man, I really do hope they buy the book enough that there is a Lost Omen Legends 2, because this is a series that I could enjoy as much as I enjoyed the Revisited series from first edition, which is what really brought me into the campaign setting originally. I think Legends could bring me in a whole new way and in a much more entertaining format.
Well, we know that they did because of something called 16.042.00.001.6.
It sounded like you said we know that they did because of subcults, and then you got cut off. I didn't understand you.
Never mind. It's not worth it.
It's not worth it? All right. Faram, are we going to try and do the news? We missed last episode, and so we are weeks behind.
So weeks behind. I just don't know if this thing's going to hold it together, boss.
All right. Let's see what we can do, I guess.
Yes, yes. This might be a very short news. We're going to try our best, gang.
So I think people are going to get to real time experience this conversation about what we're going to do with the rest of this episode. We've got like 50 news items, some of which, if we don't cover now, I don't think we could cover them because we've got Gen Con coming up. Like, next episode is definitely going to be Gen Con hype. The episode after that is going to be Gen Con review.
Let's just hit as many as we can.
Okay. So we were officially doing a news segment.
Yeah. But it's going to be like a rapid fire news segment.
Okay, before that, though, I do think we should mention that we've got the after show, which is going to be on Discord, and therefore does not rely on Twitch,
right,
and so is still something we should do.
Absolutely,
so,
and it will probably work.
For our patrons, you already heard about this, especially some of you were involved in the chat on our patron chat channel on our Discord. We were talking about ways that we can be giving back to our patrons, and one of the ideas was that we would have an after show, which is something that we used to do informally once in a while. We would go off the air and then just keep going and stop doing it. We haven't done that in a long time, and Param and I both enjoyed it, but I think it's when we shifted from starting at 8:30 to starting at 9 that then the shows would go off the air too late for us to continue to do something. But no, formally we want to bring this back. So for patrons of the $5 level or more, you are invited to Patreon's private sanctum. People who know the history of the network know that we started as 3.5 Private Sanctuary, and people that know how I like my naming conventions know that I tend to name things after spells, and that there is no Private Sanctuary spell. There's a sanctuary, and there's Mage's Private Sanctum, or just Private Sanctum, or Mordekainen's Private Sanctum, depending on what edition you're playing. So we are finally correcting that wrong that I accidentally named the podcast wrong originally. So we are having these after shows where we're just going to chat about whatever. It's going to be on Discord. We've got a chat channel set up inside of the Patreon backer section. So as soon as we go off the air here, start heading on over there, and we're going to join up with you shortly after. We'll probably just take 2 minutes to make sure the stream was not actively on fire throughout most of this episode. So that'll be way at the end. But first, Param, the news.
The news.
There's a new Pathfinder Humble Bundle. And finally, Param, it is dedicated to second edition. There have been some great Pathfinder Humble Bundles through the years. But even as recent as the one from a few months ago, it was still mostly or entirely Starfinder and Pathfinder first edition related. And that's... like, it's great if you're still playing those editions. I mean, we're playing Adventurous. And if you're still collecting those editions, but as a tool, this could be a great opportunity for Paizo to be getting Pathfinder in front of new players' faces. And by continuing to do first edition stuff, it almost feels like a bait and switch where people are like, wow, I really do like this Pathfinder thing. Then they find out there's a second edition. So it feels like they have finally, Pathfinder has a second edition, has enough miles under its belt that now we can start seeing these Pathfinder Humble Bundles. And this one is really most of what you can ask for from a Pathfinder second edition Humble Bundle. It's the core rulebook. It's a whole bunch of the core the hardcover rulebooks. If not, is it all of them, Param?
Let's see.
It's missing a couple.
It's core rulebook. It is also world guide, bestiary, character guide. It doesn't seem to have Gods and Magic.
Yeah, doesn't have Gods and Magic, doesn't have the Game Mastery Guide. So it has the first wave, the first volley of hardcover books. I think these all came out in 2019. Mm-hmm. I think that might be one thing that links them all. But it also has a whole bunch of adventures. And as Luis pointed out to us, it has the maps that go along with those adventures and the quests. And it also has some of the web fiction, which is, you know, collected in a cool PDF format. And for $30, 40, 50 Canadian, you not only get all of those PDFs that we mentioned, but you also get a physical copy of the core rulebook. The second edition core rulebook will be mailed to you. Shipping is not included, so this is on top of that. But 40, 50 Canadian, $30 American for all of that, including a physical copy of the book, that is a great deal. This is a great introductory pack. If you know anyone that is curious about Pathfinder, this is the show them this. Show them this and convince them that this is definitely well worth their money. Especially because it supports three great charities, the National Urban League, the Carl Brandon Society, and the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, which is also the charity that we had donated to last month. Mm-hmm. We, as in the No Direction Network. There is a blog post that goes into all of these charities and explains all of the different items, all of the different products that are in this bundle. It's up on Paizo.com. Item number two, Param.
Item number two.
Kobolds are always available now in Pathfinder Society. Yes! What does that mean?
It means that when the Advanced Player's Guide comes out, which will have the rules for playing kobolds, anybody who's playing Pathfinder Society can play a kobold without having to get a special boon or anything to do it.
You seem especially excited about this. Param, are you a big fan of kobolds?
I am a big fan of kobolds in general, but more specifically, Pathfinder Society has had a very strong relations with the kobold species ever since we've had the Sewer Dragons of Absalom adventure path. And then they've just become reoccurring characters that have tied very well into the society. Even the playtest adventures featured them very heavily and very positively. And we've always had this little soft spot in their heart for these particular group of tiny dragons. And they're really cool characters. And so finally getting to play one of the Sewer Dragons, because that's sort of the implied route here, is that you're playing one of the Sewer Dragons who has officially joined the society, is just absolutely wonderful. And I guess it ties into the Free RPG Day stuff that's been announced.
It also ties into the Advanced Player's Guide, which is coming out soon at Gen Con. Mm-hmm. And that is where the Kobold's rules will be. Mm-hmm. And so once that book comes out, you are able to play a Kobold in Pathfinder Society. And it won't cost you any achievement points. It's just a free option for everybody. This one is something that our entire last episode, or at least the first segment of it, was supposed to be dedicated to. The Battle of the Pantheons winner was announced. Do you want to quickly remind people what the Battle of the Pantheons was, Param, and why it involves the No Direction Network?
Well, in the Battle of the Pantheons, one of our members, Dustin, managed to arrange a contest between cooperation between us and Paizo, where users could submit possible pantheons using the pantheon rules introduced in Gods and Magic. And the winner of the contest, the best submitted one that went through several rounds of judging and cutting, and then finally a vote from all players that wished to vote on it, became official Pathfinder canon and a choosable option in Pathfinder Society. So that was some pretty important incentive, if you ask me.
And the winner was the Path of Heavens Pantheon by Connor Young.
Yes.
Now, we were hoping to have Connor on last episode. Unfortunately, due to no fault of his own, Param and I both had to cancel for various reasons. And so what we are going to do, we've got the presenting podcast that is the No Direction version of the Intrepid Heroes Presents podcast that John Godek does for the network. John has given me permission to take over for one episode so that I can interview Connor Young. Also, Connor is in Ireland, which makes scheduling this a little more difficult to do live. Mm-hmm. And so for us to be able to find like an early morning for me, mid-afternoon for him, where it's not live and we can pre-record it and then release it some Wednesday. John and I will figure out the best time to release it. That's just going to be easier on everybody.
Yeah. But yeah, Path of Heavens, when I was doing judging for this, was absolutely one of my top picks. So I was super glad to see that it won in the end.
So I had a color-coded thing where like green was the one I definitely wanted to see. Yellow was one of the ones that I was iffy on. Mm-hmm. And Path of Heavens was one of my green ones, and it wasn't one of the short lists that I submit. And I was trying to figure out why, because my notes weren't clear on it. And it's because a lot of the ones we sent were kind of travel-related in theme. And so I'm not surprised a travel one won. And I have, even though it wasn't one of my shortlisted ones, it was one of the ones I enjoyed quite a bit. And it just kind of showed that Connor kind of had his finger on the pulse of what people wanted out of their pantheon.
Man, there was a whole lot of people that basically submitted the exact same idea.
Yeah, there were two or three themes, and maybe we'll go into it more in that episode where I talked to Connor. But it was kind of fascinating on our side of it to be like, wow, these are the three trends that make up like 60% of these submissions. Why? Yeah. What do these three trends mean to the people? Mm-hmm. Next bit of news. The agents of Edgewatch. Paizo put out a statement about the now controversial adventure path that is coming out at Gen Con, Agents of Edgewatch, where you get to play the city guard. And just in light of the protests against police brutality that came out right around PaizoCon, actually during PaizoCon online a couple of months ago, which is just a reflection of a lot of frustration that's been building for years and decades, and basically since police are a thing, suddenly something that could have been a regular topic for an adventure path any other time has really become something that is just, it is terrible timing for a lot of reasons, including from Paizo as a publisher. They can't just put this off and delay it because the adventure paths, their schedules don't allow that kind of thing. Right. And so Eric Mona, the publisher at Paizo, put out a statement explaining that, yes, they totally acknowledge that this is a problematic topic for an adventure path. No, they can't do it without severely hurting Paizo's financial situation in a year that we know Paizo has not been in a great financial situation because of game stores being closed down, distributors just not accepting product for a while. Things are slowly starting to get back into it, and Paizo managed to get through it without furloughing any employees or laying anybody off. To the best of my knowledge, I believe that is a true statement, but if there was any of that, it was minimal, and they were trying to put it off for as long as possible. So they are still putting this product out, but they've made two major changes that they were able to handle. One of them was an update to the player's guide that was not originally planned to be in there. Oh, there we go. Daigle confirmed in chat that everyone is still there.
Thank you.
I am happy to hear that, yes. And I was fairly confident, but I didn't want to say something with full confidence without fact checking it. Mm-hmm. So so one of the two things that was adjusted, the player's guide includes several sidebars about handling the more sensitive topics, reminding people that non-violent options are available, and that is something that characters in the position that they're in as city guards should be exploring, and also a sidebar on how to run this campaign without using the city guard as a theme, just to kind of change things up and just be adventurers that are helping out in the city. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the other thing is that, let me just make sure I'm getting this right. So they are donating some proceeds. There we go. Paizo will donate a portion of proceeds from all volumes of the Agents of Edgewatch adventure path sold through the end of 2021 to the NAACP Legal Defense Fund.
And then they said that next month they'll announce another effort towards that means, which turned out to be the Humble Bundle.
We are live again.
You're live again. Yep.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, everybody.
Param, I think that point you were making bears repeating.
Yes, it's one of the things to point out here is that that Eric acknowledges that some employees did indeed bring up that this was going to be problematic and a concern, and that he did not give those concerns the consideration they were due, and that is one of his regrets and oversights. So they are acknowledging that this wasn't just a case of bad timing, that there was actual some bad calls here made, that with some of the sensitivity that needed to be taken. So it's not just a matter of bad timing. I hope, and I have not read not one page of this adventure yet, I hope that they have handled this with the care and concern that I am used to seeing Paizo produce products for, and I am hopeful that this is more well handled than similar products would have been under different hands.
Sorry, Param, I've been watching our feed because it was frozen for me, but I listened in and people could hear you the whole time. We got to wrap things up.
Yeah,
there's several other bullet points here.
Yeah, sorry, gang. Is there anything we can do before? Let's see. We need to talk. Core Founder's a thing. We'll talk about it when we can't. It's too big to try to fit into a broken segment.
Kira and Marissa got married. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's wonderful. We squeed when we first saw their first kiss, and now to see that they're now officially together in the matrimonial sense is fantastic.
All right, so we're just going to wrap things up. I do want to bring attention. Crystal Fraser's new blog went up today. I strongly recommend people go check it out. Phantasmal Killer, it's called. It's got a great subsystem for an alternate way to make your villains, your big villains, stand out as threats.
Gen Con event registration is open. If you want to participate in Gen Con, go do so. If you're wondering what we're doing for Gen Con, watch this space. You can imagine maybe what we might be doing.
All right. Anyone who is a patron, I recommend that you come check out the Patreon channel, the Patreon backer channel, where we are going to be moving to in just a minute and hopefully have a much more stable connection. Sorry, everybody. Thanks. Until next time, I'm Ryan Costello.
I'm Jefferson J. Thacker, also known as Param.
And if you want to find the bath, you need no direction.